If you are all fully vaccinated and are comfortable with it, we can go without masks.
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah, we are.
But I had a terrible scare a couple weeks ago, so
I really appreciate
I'm being extremely cautious.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I do appreciate that. It just...
And I've tried to space us out where we should be. Okay.
Yes, yes, Barbara. So, you do have the form, correct?
I have what?
The
Did you get the form?
Okay, let me give you that too. Okay.
Do you have one?
No, I have one here for her. Yes.
Okay.
There's the questionnaire, the survey, whatever you want to refer it to as.
Okay.
It actually says it's a survey form. So.
Who are you all with, by the way?
We are representing, we are volunteers with the Virginia for Election Transparency, VFET. Okay. Yes. And they developed, they're using this survey form. So as you can see at the top, it lists the county, observers, who's here today, the date of the interview, your names, that sort of thing. So, I will fill in the date and time of the initial call and email, which was like 2 weeks ago.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When we were communicating. And my memory serves me right, it was like the 27th of August, and you promptly returned my
the
calls.
Email.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you did agree to meet with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna start with the interview. So first of all, this being so close to the election season, I deeply appreciate you taking the time to meet with us today. We thank you so much for your time.
And I appreciate your recognition that this is,
it's
wild and hairy this time of year.
Yes, you have deadlines, I get that, yeah. So anyway, the purpose of the observation program is to provide voters with accurate information about the election process. Emphasize how important you think your role is in ensuring that everyone in the county sees the elections here are free, fair, and legitimate. So first, we have a few general questions. The first one being, what is your biggest concern about the upcoming election?
At this point in the election cycle, my biggest concern is getting out the first batch of absentee ballots. Especially with the new permanent absentee ballot process that's in effect in Virginia now.
As of July 1.
Mm-hmm. My fear is that people that checked that box will then get a ballot in the mail and say, why am I getting this? And there's already mistrust out there with elections after the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably my biggest concern with this absentee rollout.
Mm-hmm. So that's your biggest concern. Any other major concerns that you may have?
In person, and no excuse absentee voting, it's still a fairly new process in Virginia. So we are still learning how to estimate turnouts so that we can properly staff our precincts. It is important to us to be flexible with that, so that if we're seeing higher turnouts than we anticipated, that we can adjust the crew that's serving. We're wanting to be responsible and accountable with county funding, taxpayer money, but we also want to make sure that we have sufficient staff there so that our voters have a good experience and feel that things were done in an efficient and clear process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would be my second biggest thing.
Okay. And how many voters do you have registered here in the county?
We have 59,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little over that, but.
Mm-hmm. And may I ask you how long you've been a registrar?
I have been registrar for 17 years.
Okay. So you have lots of experience. Seen lots of changes. All right, number three. And you alluded to this in your previous comments there. Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, personnel and training needed to run an effective election in November?
I would say yes. Both Bedford County and my electoral board are very supportive, as are multiple other county departments. We rely on our maintenance teams to help with elections with delivering equipment and supplies. We have our IT people that support us. We use our Parks and Recreation Department facilities, school facilities, Welcome Center, the libraries. So we have all sorts of groups within the county that help support elections and provide space to us, and the library helps with training facilities and so forth. So yes, I think that we have the resources that we need. So far as personnel, we have a good number of election officials that are trained. We typically have more than we need, but that's a good position to be in, because you never know when somebody's got a grandbaby on the way, or someone's sick, or they're traveling and can't work that election. So we have a good supply of workers. It's just a matter of the electoral board doing their job and their work to get them positioned throughout the county where we need them.
So that's not your responsibility, that's the electoral
board. They take responsibility for that.
Okay. So number four, it refers to number three, and you've answered yes, so we'll skip number four.
Okay.
Number five, the county election board is supposed to consist of two Democrats and a Republican under a Democrat governor. But in some areas, boards have had trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead, or another Democrat. What is the situation in this county?
We have the state-defined requirements. We have two Democrats and a Republican.
Wonderful. Okay, great.
And in my 17 years, it has never been anything but
what?
The exact makeup that the state has defined.
Okay. Sounds like you have a lot of people who are very civic-minded and
indeed,
willing
we
to
do. We're very lucky
step
with that.
Up.
Yes, you are very
yes.
lucky.
Yeah. Okay. Number six. What about precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans?
Well, that can be a challenge, especially in a locality that tends to lean predominantly to one party more than the other. We do always ensure that the chief and the assistant chief are different parties. And then beyond that, we try to balance the numbers, but we do often end up using unaffiliated officers of election. Up until 2 years ago, the individual could declare themselves, I want to represent the Democratic Party, or I want to represent the Republican Party. And then 2 years ago, our guidance came from elect that unless the party chair assigns that person as their representative, they're unaffiliated. So the last 2 years have been a growing experience and a collaborative effort with our party chairs to help us recruit and identify more people of their specific party.
I see.
So we are getting much better than that. But for now, I will say we do have a Democrat and a Republican for the chief assistant. We try to balance, but we also use unaffiliated officers. Now, in doing that, we also comply with code in that we evaluate it prior to each election, and we notify the party chairs where we don't have exact balances. The party chairs are aware of it, and they have the opportunity, if they choose to send us more names. In reality, in the last couple of years, they've approved what we have and then put their effort in prior to the next election to recruit more workers for us in the areas of the county where we need it.
Okay.
That's really good that you do that, because I've heard some others do not.
Well, it's a good working relationship.
Yes.
We do.
Like
we have
very
a very good
relationship,
and they're being responsive to our needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Now, number seven, is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round or mostly near elections?
Well, again, I'm one of the fortunate few probably in the state. We have a great relationship with the Electoral Board, and they are actively engaged in what we do. They participate in every recruitment that we do, every training program that we do. They are in attendance at every single one. They help with setups and tearing down equipment and whatever when we're doing equipment training. They handle staffing the precincts for election day, making those phone calls. They visit every single precinct on election day multiple times, so our chiefs and assistants know they're going to get a minimum of 3 visits from an electoral board member during the day, so that if there's a question or a problem or they need additional supplies, the electoral board carries all of that stuff in their vehicles on election day and are able to get there quicker and be more responsive. And a courier from this office could get there because they scatter themselves amongst the county so that they're within 15 minutes of most any precinct. So we can get a response there quickly.
Can I ask you a question about, during the year though, do you meet with those electors, the Board of Electors during the year? Do you have any meetings? Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do.
Is it on a monthly basis or kind of whenever you need to or quarterly or something?
There are some code-defined meetings that we have to have, like for appointing the positions on the electoral board, appointing the officers of election, reviewing the registrar, some of those specific assigned meetings.
Okay.
But then we also do additional meetings during the year just to address business,
okay.
So budget,
and
things that have to be handled during the year.
Okay.
So yes, we have meetings all during the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to what they do on election day, they are the team that is at the warehouse on election night for the workers to bring their supplies back to the warehouse and turn them in, and they inventory what's being turned in as it comes in that night.
Are you there?
No, I'm not there usually until after, it's usually after 11 o'clock when I get over there because I have to enter election results. So my board is over there taking care of that. I am lucky to have a really, really good active board.
But when you're entering in the results, who is with you?
I have my staff from the office with me.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that clarification.
Sure.
All righty, now we're going to move on to a few questions on the voter roll. When was the last time the voter file in your county was scrubbed or cleaned?
Well, that's a daily process. We get updates in our what we call our hopper, which is the state system. Of deaths and felony convictions and things like that we handle usually the day they come in to us. If there is someone that goes to the DMV and they check a non-citizen block, we get that right away in the state system. So those are handled just on an ongoing basis. Then the state will periodically do what they call NCOA processing, National Confirmation of Address Processing, where they send correspondence out to voters and the voters respond to their registrar to update addresses or notify us that they're in another state or whatever. That last process was done in July of this year.
Okay. So 9 has 2 parts. Does the health department, coroner, or Bureau of Vital Statistics send a list of deceased people to your office every month so they can be removed from the voter roll? And you've partially answered that.
Yes and no, and I actually anticipated that being the question. We get a schedule from the Department of Elections every month that addresses the list maintenance for that month, and you get an update from the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office for people who had their rights restored. You get deaths through the Bureau of Vital Statistics, felony convictions through the state police office, non-citizens through the DMV, mentally incapacitated will come from the circuit court. They send you a report of anybody who's been declared mentally incapacitated. And then deaths and duplicates that have been matched in other states where somebody may have registered in another state that were previously registered in Virginia, we get through the ERIC program. So it's an ongoing and constant maintenance process.
Can I ask you, what is the ERIC program?
ERIC is Electronic Registration Information. It's an information sharing program, and there's a consortium of states throughout the United States that participate in it, and they share their voter rolls with one another so that your state can then run and see if there's a match.
So not every state does that, unfortunately.
Not every state does it. I think they're... I want to say there's like 17, but I'm not positive about that number.
So Barbara, on the list maintenance schedule, it says, like the last two, it says ongoing. So when you get the report, all these others are filled in, all these other blanks are filled in?
No, that is the actual report I got for this month. If it's ongoing, it just means it's going to appear in my hopper
mm-hmm.
on a
mm-hmm.
daily basis as they get that information.
Okay.
And so we process it as we get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I just saw it blank, so I didn't know if this was just like a form off the
okay.
website or, so. But you said this is the actual form.
Right, that's sent to us from Department of Elections.
Okay, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty, so since that's been answered, we don't need to do 9B, so I can use this to go there. Number 10. When was the last time the clerk of courts submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
In 17 years, I have never received such a list.
Okay, okay. Alrighty.
I'm not certain that there's a provision in code that requires them to give that to us. I would have to look into that.
Yeah, yeah.
Ask Josh about that.
Yeah. It's on the questionnaire, and I'm
okay.
asking the question.
No, that's fine. I've never gotten
sure.
that.
We're not
so.
Sure how they all got on there.
Number 11. When was the last time you had access to the National Change of Address List or any other change of address list?
I don't really have access. Those things go through the state, the Department of Elections, and then they process the records and notify the localities or send out notices to the voters, and the voters respond to the localities.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do not have direct access to that.
Okay. Number 12A, are you confident that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
I am confident that it is up to date with everything I have knowledge of.
Okay, honest answer. And I appreciate it. And so, you didn't answer no. You answered yes with a contingency. So are there, just because it's there, is there or are do you have any main concerns about the list?
Not really. It's just from having been here for so many years. I can tell you, you would be amazed at how frequently some people move.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some people that I'll get a notice two or three times a year with new addresses. And so it is a constant effort to stay on top of it and get that changed. And we have our policy in here is whatever you get that day gets done that day before you go home. So we try to process every day's workload as it comes in. And it's just amazing how much some people move. So, as
like,
I said, if we know about it, we've got it entered
yeah.
and it's taken care
yeah.
of.
It's like, I just saw that name. How, you know, these people are almost like friends. They see their name so often.
Exactly.
Yeah. Alrighty, number 13. How many households in your locality have more than 7 individuals registered at the same address?
That's an interesting question. I'm curious why that number 7. It was the number that you picked.
I don't know the exact answer to why it's number 7, but there are, I'm aware of, like, sometimes there's
a group home,
a residence, you know, where there would be multiple people there who
at
are
that address.
At that address
so,
who
right.
would be, you know, voters. But then they're also wondering if there's multiple people that are using the same address.
Oh, I see. Okay. To be honest, I have no report that would generate that data for me. I do not know the answer to that.
Okay. Okay. Alrighty. And if you ever do find any information, you can always forward it.
I'll be happy to.
Alrighty. Number 14. During registration, how do you verify that voters are citizens?
There really isn't a verification process for that. The voter checks the box on their application that they're a citizen, and they have to sign the oath at the bottom of the application. And then beyond that, we accept it at face value.
Okay. Alrighty. Becky. So we're going to move on now. Concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and integrity of voting machines in the 2020 elections. And number 15, actually we've learned this is, the number 3 is incorrect. There are either 4 or 5 types of voting machines used in Virginia. Can you tell me which machines you use?
I can. We use the Dominion ImageCast Evolution, and it's the version 4.14.25.
Good. Alrighty. Who calibrates?
Is it just the 2? You just use the 2?
Do what?
You say you just use those 2?
No,
or
it's just
3 different ones?
It's 1, right?
It's one type of machine. Do
one
mean,
type of machine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you need the
specifics
again? Okay. Alrighty. Number 16. So who calibrates the voting machines, and can you please explain the process?
Our machines are calibrated by our vendor, which is Atlantic Election Services out of Richmond. They are certified by Dominion. And the process is part of our logic and accuracy testing procedure, and they go in during that process. They calibrate the machine, check the date, check the time, make sure that the ink cartridges are filled and functioning properly. We actually run test sheets through to make sure that if we have a voter who is an ADA voter and is using the accessible equipment that marks their ballots for them, we put a test ballot through to make sure that it will mark it correctly according to the selections you make on the screen. You just check all of the features on the machine. And that's done in the presence of, I'm always there, electoral board members can be there, you invite both party chairs to be there. So
the party chairs?
Yes.
Can they send a representative?
They can send a representative if they're not available to come.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
Can I ask a follow-up question
sure.
on that? How do you choose an election vendor? I mean, do you vet them? I mean, who vets them, and how do they audit that vendor?
The vendor, though.
To be sure that they're honest and doing the right things.
Well, the party, or not the party, the equipment vendor, when they apply to be certified in Virginia, have documentation that they have to submit to the Department of Elections. And so we're not involved in that process.
Right, right.
We simply have to use a certified vendor.
Gosh. So the state actually does.
That onus is on the state, yes.
Okay, thank you. That was confusing.
So you pick from, or maybe not you specifically, possibly the board.
Collaboratively.
picks the types of voting machines.
Right, you look at the equipment. They're all certified to the same federal standards. They're all certified to the same state standards. They all have a few little features that are unique to their system that may work better in a larger locality or a smaller locality, or the weight and size of the machines are different. So you look at the features that will best serve your community and what you need, and select
and
your
costs
equipment.
And everything else.
Yes.
Thank you.
Alrighty, so at 17 you said you do invite party representatives, or they can send chair can send a representative.
Right.
So that's the answer to number 17.
Okay. Right. We always send them, I send them an email on the date that we pick the date for LNA, and then we also send them a certified mail so that they or signing to attest to the fact that they were officially notified.
Mm-hmm.
And then I usually follow up with text messages and phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
I'm
do
dead.
A very good job. Cover your...
Has that been done here for the county yet?
We did the central absentee early voting machines on Monday of this week.
Mm-hmm.
But the machines for the precinct level have not yet been done. We typically don't do those until after we get all the absentee ballots out of the way for that first initial mailing.
Is there a deadline for that?
The 17th.
For the absentee and for, well, we, for the absentee.
For the voting machines?
Well, yes, because the voting starts now at the 17th, so obviously that's got
to
be done.
Right, it has to be done prior to the start of absentee voting.
Right, so you don't send any ballots out after the 17th?
Yes, we do.
Oh.
But your first batch of ballots that go out are thousands of ballots in that first batch.
Everything that you already know is going to be
right, goes out in your initial mailing.
Okay.
And then you daily send out absentee ballots for people that request them each day.
Okay.
So everything I get in today gets keyed into the system.
Okay.
And then tomorrow their absentee ballot will go in the mail.
And the absentee ballots go out how far to the voting date, the actual voting date? I mean,
they go out until, I think the last day to mail is Tuesday before the end. It's Thursday before the election. Let me look and make sure of that.
Is that statewide or is that?
That is statewide.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Set in law.
I'm learning too. I'm sorry.
It will be on Friday, a week before the election. So we're 10 days before the election.
Oh, okay.
It's the last time
that
you can send out.
They
moved that
back.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. I'm glad they did.
Yeah, because the mail services are slower than they used to be.
Okay.
With our mail being going down to Carolina and
right.
taking a vacation
oh, boy,
before
yeah.
it comes back.
Yeah, you're right. Ours goes to Greensboro.
See the suntan lotion on it. And
that's right.
Until what date are people allowed to request an absentee ballot?
Up through that
same
date.
Up through that same
mm-hmm.
date.
Because mm-hmm. they could come into the registrar's of your office and request it that day.
Yes, ma'am.
They could, but they might as well vote now because
well,
they, if
now
they're here
early
they might
voting,
as well
that's
can
true.
Do
that right
but we get
that's
them we check our online registrations right up to 5 o'clock on that day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So that anything that comes in that day is going out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Number 18A, are voting machines ever connected to the internet?
No, they are not.
Okay.
Ours are not.
Mm-hmm.
I'll answer
well,
for Bedford County.
So since they are not connected to the internet, how and when are they updated?
They are updated using thumb drives or flashcards for program updates, certified program updates.
By the vendor.
They are never updated unless the state has certified the update. The last one we had has been about 4 years.
4 years.
Like they're due.
They are due. In fact, they have to be updated again to the new certification standards before the end of June 2022. So after we get through this election, we'll start the process of updating. But they didn't get the certification in place until June of this year, I believe. So we did not feel that there was sufficient time to get that installed and test it correctly.
Yeah.
With everything that has to be done before November election. So ours will be done after the November election.
And the vendor actually does that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. With all the new deadlines and the extended voting period, it just really pushes your schedule.
It does. And that's a serious thing. You want to make sure that when you do an update that you have time to test it thoroughly before
mm-hmm.
it's used.
Alrighty, so with that segue, many changes in election procedures were introduced in response to the COVID pandemic, and some people have argued that these changes weaken the integrity of the election process. So number 19, as an election professional, do you think the changes made in the election process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened election integrity, strengthened election integrity, or made no change in election integrity?
I'm going to say made no change, and I'll clarify why I say that. This question to me is asking for my personal opinion, and
yes.
I make it a practice not to let my personal opinion influence anything I do in this office. And so our effort here is to make sure we're following all federal law,
uh-huh.
all state law. And from that standpoint, we did, and so the integrity
from that standpoint
remained.
Because, as you said, you've been in this position for 17 years, so you are an election professional, and having been in this position for 17 years, you can see how things have transpired over that time. And so your response here is very valued.
it would be that, to me, the integrity is in making sure that you are following the law. And from that point, yes, we did. Now, the law is different than it used to be, mm-hmm. but whether that's better or worse is a personal opinion, and I won't weigh in on that.
Okay, thank you, Barbara.
That's good.
All right, number 20. A, did you receive any funding or in-kind contributions for training, staff, voter education, or equipment, or any other purpose from outside the state of Virginia?
We received CARES Act funding, but that was, I mean, that's federal money through the state of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Bedford got a little over $71,000. And I see the next part there is, what did you use it for? The largest part was used for additional poll workers and staffing for pandemic response. We also purchased postage for ballots. We got a couple of additional laptops that were used in our voting center because we did operate a vote center for the last two elections. We bought a couple pieces of mail processing equipment because the volume of voting by mail increased significantly for Bedford County. We bought ballot drop boxes, and then we used funds for training programs with our election officials.
Okay.
We got a lot of benefit from that funding.
Great. Sounds like it really helped and put to good use.
Mm-hmm.
Number 21. Effective July 1, 2021, Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballots for any election during a declared state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. How are you training your staff to ensure that there is a signature match for the upcoming elections?
We actually did a formal training August 18th. August 18th. Where this was one of the issues that we addressed was the signature requirement. So all of my staff in the office is comfortable with it. We've also had several just in-staff meetings to discuss it. And they are being very careful when people request absentee ballots to make sure that they tell them that the witness signature is required for this election. And then we're also sending out the instruction sheets with the absentee ballots. So that the voter sees very clearly on the instruction sheet that the witness signature is required.
It's required, but it is I think this, let's see, no, it doesn't. I was thinking it said something else, but it doesn't, so I'm going to reread that just for a second.
When they come back in and the ballots come back in, though, are the signatures... You have to look at the, is it on the envelope where you have to make sure that there's a witness on the envelope?
We verify that it's signed, but Virginia does not have any signature matching requirements.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where I was looking, the very end says.
Right. There are a lot of states that use signature matching software.
Mm-hmm, but we don't have it here in Virginia.
We do not.
Okay. Number 22. There is a lot of concern in Virginia and across the country about the security and integrity of the ballot drop boxes. And I understand some places use drop bags, so I'll use those two words interchangeably.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What are the chain of custody procedures for the ballot drop boxes?
The biggest one, I think, would be is that we don't have unattended drop boxes in Bedford County. We have one inside the registrar's office, one inside our vote center, and then each polling place on election day has a ballot drop box inside the precinct. So there are election official eyes on that drop box at all times.
The day of voting.
The day of voting, and here in our office and the vote center. They're not just sitting out by themselves, they're being observed.
So they're all through physical observation, not a camera.
Correct.
Okay. All right, so if there was an issue, then it's not like you could go back and replay a tape. You'd have to rely on the person that was supposed to be witnessing it.
Okay.
All right.
And with the process of the security and integrity of the ballot drop boxes, the chain of custody for that is that we always have two people that empty the ballot drop boxes. It's never done by just one. And that's one I figured you would ask about too. This is our chain of custody form that's used in each precinct for election day. And the process is just that when they set the bag up, that more ours is a canvas bag with a zipper and a seal. And so they set the bag up, they verify that it's empty, and one R and one D sign off on that. They put a seal on it, record the seal number, and the R and the D sign off on that. And then it's under observation all day long. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, when they're ready to empty it, an R and a D, break the seal, record that seal number so that they make sure it matches the seal number that was on it that morning. Then they open the bag, take the ballots out, count how many they were. And that is actually printed on a label on a big envelope. They put the ballots then that they counted into that envelope, seal the envelope, and then they sign off for how many they put in that envelope. And they bring those back. That envelope then comes back to the electoral board at the warehouse that night. The electoral board members sign off that they received it from those two officers. And then when it's transferred to our central absentee precinct for opening and counting, they sign off on the fact that they're opening it and how many ballots were in that envelope when they opened it, so that you assure that the chain of custody is there. We do have some precincts in Bedford County where we have couriers that pick up election supplies, because we're a really large county and, you know, 45 minutes to some of our precincts. So after such a long day, election day, we do have a few precincts where we send couriers to pick up their supplies. But the couriers sign off that they received that. Both couriers will sign off that they received that envelope from the R and the D in that precinct. And then the couriers have to transfer it to the electoral board and they sign off. So we try to maintain that that documentation.
So this is the ballot collection from precinct drop boxes chain of custody report.
Yes, ma'am.
That every precinct follows.
Yes.
Every chief in every precinct,
yes,
must follow, an assistant chief. This is unique to your county. This particular
form, yes, is one that we use. Most localities have some form of documentation,
okay,
that they use. The state provided us with a form that we use for the daily opening of the box within our office. And again, we do two people opening that, counting how many were in there,
mm-hmm,
and then processing,
okay,
for that day as well.
Well, thank you for this in-depth information. That is truly helpful.
Can I just ask you again, the couriers then take the bags back to
the warehouse, to the electoral board.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where the election officers are counting or accepting them. How do you?
Where the electoral board is accepting supplies.
Okay, thank you.
I have to figure out where I left off. We did ask about the video with monitoring, which you do not have, was the answer to 23. So 24, well, it says, who is responsible for reviewing the video? And you don't have that, so that's a not applicable answer. Which is not an option on the sheet, but that's what we're going to say.
Okay.
To strengthen public confidence in the integrity of elections, we hope to expand our observation efforts and have a few questions about election pages, nonpartisan observers, and party observers. So on number 25, would you provide training and support or designate us to provide training and support for an election day page program as described in 24.2-604.3.
We actually have had a student page program for the entire 17 years that I've been registrar. We work with the government teachers at our three local high schools, and we reach out to them for student volunteers. Then we train them, and they come on election day. They serve a minimum of 2-hour segments, but they can serve the entire day if they want to. And it's been a very successful program. It's not one we're using this year because of the COVID situation, but we've used it every November election.
And it's well received by the high schools and
well received. Yes, the students get extra credit doing
the community
service.
Yeah.
And then they, we've had a few that have become election officials in force after they get out of high school as well. So it's a good introduction to them for what goes on. Now, they're very limited with what they can do. They can't touch any official election materials. So they can't check voters in. They can't hand out ballots. They can't monitor the voting booth. They can't monitor the voting machine. But they're greeters at the door. They show people where the sample ballots are located. They encourage them to have their ID out and ready when they get to the check-in desk. They monitor for curbside voters that need assistance. They hand out I voted stickers, and they're there to actually see the process.
That's great.
So it's a really good introduction for them.
And is that primarily seniors that are involved? Or
it is primarily seniors. We'll occasionally have a couple of juniors, and we actually even have some homeschooled students whose parents will reach out to us because they have heard of the program and ask, can my homeschooled child do this? Absolutely. Yeah. And we actually, I'm going to pat myself on the back with this one. We actually had some students that were foreign exchange students in Bedford County several years back. And one of the part of the contract with your foreign exchange students is that you give them an opportunity to experience everything that your student would have experienced. And so we had them reach out to us and say, we'd like to have a foreign exchange student serve as a page. And because the page oath, the student page oath says, I certify I'm a citizen of the United States, we could not have them do that. So we reached out to ELECT, and ELECT generated a new form that did not include that language that they are a citizen of the United States. So there is now a non-citizen student page form that can be used in Virginia as well.
If necessary. Okay. Well, maybe you have a really good pilot program here, and other counties in the area can benefit from it and utilize
it. We've enjoyed our student page program.
Yeah. Okay. Number 26. Would you authorize nonpartisan election observers with the same rights as party representatives as described in 24.2-604.5A?
That we would consider probably on a case-by-case basis. The electoral board certainly could authorize it. If there were independents on the ballot and there weren't party people on the ballot that are typically there to do the observing or the monitoring. And there would be a lot of factors that play into whether you said yes or no, including the size of the precinct that they're asking to observe in. You know, some of our precincts are in gymnasiums and some of them are in little tiny conference rooms. So the space that's available would factor into it as well. So there would be a lot of factors, but yes, we would certainly consider it.
Be open to that. Wonderful. Number 27. Would you authorize, well, we just kind of answered that already. 27, would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
Again, on a case-by-case basis, and it, again, depends on the space in the precinct, but we've actually done this, I know, two times during my tenure as registrar. One was a group from Uzbekistan that wanted to observe elections. And then the other group, I'm trying to remember where they were from. I can't recall. But we've sent them to some of our schools that were in gymnasiums. And they would come into the far side of the gymnasium. They didn't talk or communicate at all while they were in there. They just observed. And then their mentor or sponsor would take them back outside into another area of the school, and they would talk about what was happening and why we were doing different things. So mm-hmm. it was a good learning experience for them.
To understand the process. Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Number 28. Have your local party chair been notified that they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it is open and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
I can't say that I have given them any official notification, you know, a certified mail notice or anything like that. But again, we have a good relationship with our party chairs, and we've always told them they're welcome to come in anytime. Doesn't have to even be election season. They can come in anytime and talk to us about our operations or observe what we're doing. Now, I will say that observing in this office is different than observing in a precinct, because in a precinct, what's there is more public information. In this office, we're dealing with applications that include personally identifiable information that has to be protected. Mm-hmm. So in this office, I don't know that they would have the flexibility to stand behind the check-in station, mm-hmm. simply because we have documents all over the place that would be exposed then. So
the voter application asks for your Social Security
exactly.
number.
Exactly. A lot of our documentation has information that can't be disclosed. So there would be more limitations here, but at the vote center, we've had them for both elections. We've had observers, and that went perfectly smoothly and, mm-hmm. and no problems at all. So,
wonderful.
Yes, we would consider that.
Okay. Alrighty, and I ended on 28. So, 29A, do you have a publication that you provide to your election officials regarding rights and responsibilities of observers?
We do. There are actually two. There's guidelines for campaigners and authorized representatives. This is just a quick summary of the do's and don'ts document. I'm sure you've heard from this at some of the other locations.
That's online.
Okay, yeah, the do's and don'ts is online. Party chairs can get it and review it with their people that'll be working in the field out in the parking lots on
mm-hmm.
election day.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just a quick summary of that, and it tells the observer what they can do before polls open, while polls are open, and after polls close. So this is given to all our chiefs. They have multiple copies of it, and you can have that. They have multiple copies of that, and if they have an observer come in, it's our policy that they hand them that page and say, please take a minute and read through this so you know what you can and cannot do while you're here.
And is that online?
This mm-hmm. is this the state's document?
It is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that. I've seen that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. So the answer to that is yes. That's A. So we don't need to ask B. I just like to conclude to ask you if there's anything that you feel pertinent that would be applicable to talk to about the processes here or anything in the in your office that we haven't covered that you'd like to include in this interview.
Nothing really that comes to mind. I mean, I feel like we have a very transparent office, and the things that we're happy to discuss with pretty much anyone that has a question about it. We try to be very responsive with emails and so forth with citizens that don't understand how a process works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell them, make an appointment, come on in, let's sit down and talk about it. Because I do think that understanding the how and the why
mm-hmm.
gives people faith in the system.
Exactly, yes. And we talked about this more in the beginning of the interview as far as concerns, but have you seen the volume of calls increase in this office with, questions and confusion about what's going on?
After last November's election, yes. It was all we could do to answer phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
The national media really prompted a lot of concerns and distrust in the system.
Third party
third-party mailings and,
yeah, that they're receiving right now in the
yes,
mail.
Yes, more of them going out, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true, okay. Well, Barbara, thank you for taking the time and completing the survey with us. We truly appreciate you making an effort and answering our questions and being so open about it. And Mike, thank you for being here too. We really appreciate you being able to attend this and be part of it. And I think that's pretty much wraps it up for us as far as the interview goes.
I would like to thank every registrar throughout this entire state. This is on top of things as you are.
Yeah.
We have an office that seems to be as well run and as you say, transparent, and I think we give anybody with any concerns, you know, would alleviate any of their concerns for Bedford County.
And the board
yes,
also, because of volunteering.
They're fantastic.
I mean, it's
yes.
wonderful. I've never known anything of this, and it's just amazing what I'm learning.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I wish
thank
more
you.
More like it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you all do with the information?
Okay, so this actually, Carol is going to give your information. You're going to review it. We want you to review her information
right
to make
now,
sure that what she's
it.
Her notes are
right.
accurate. You know,
okay.
We want you to approve our notes.
I never was a secretary.
Yes. And so this information will be posted on the VFET website. For
one of those,
the
I did look
county
up
residents
county
will be able to
the,
listen to
this
or
part,
to read
up.
The actual
that's
answers,
why I put that
and
down.
Hopefully
make sure it's right for
that
me.
Will
okay.
give them
okay.
More trust in the system, and let them know that you are as
right here.
Transparent.
I'm concerned that they may be confused that they won't remember requesting ongoing.
Okay. Just go, you want to write down
sure.
that on there? Just go
sure.
ahead. Update what you said because, like I said,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. Because she gave so much good information.
I'd rather have you agree with what I, you know, or read it in.
How many have your organizations interviewed so far?
I know we're over 40 now. But there's 133
right.
offices.
Okay.
So
about a third of the way through.
Yeah.
But, you know, the process has been wonderful to really get different people in, I think.
Yeah.
You know, me, I didn't know anything about it. You know, and it's just an eye-opener.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's going to allow the public to really appreciate and respect the responsibilities of the registrar
yes.
office.
And the whole election process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, of course, the electoral board. We won't discount you guys.
And all your questions were good.
Thank you.
19 is the kind of tricky one there. But as Barbara indicated, kind of requires a personal assessment.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
you're right.
Integrity
the first one.
Is
well, I've only been to
integrity is kind of an end result. There either was or there wasn't integrity.
Yeah.
There could be, still be processes you don't like, but they were done with integrity.
Exactly.
If you know what
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or there were things that happened that weren't recognized.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Barbara. Jackie, you want a copy of that? Mike, how do you spell your last name?
W-A-L-D as in David, M-A-N-N.
Waldman.
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 And
two N's.
Fighting for 70 years now to keep that second N on there. My father would appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
People probably want to know why it's necessary, right?
How many GRs have you guys personally interviewed?
This is my fifth interview.
My second.
Second?
Mm-hmm.
First.
Have you found any concerns, any things that concern you yet anywhere?
I'm concerned that I didn't know anything about it, and some of the laws, I've had to look it up, I've had to look up, you know, and finding something sometimes has been difficult. The election, Virginia election coding and law, there's so much area to go to, you know, I'm not
it's
sure.
Sometimes it's a difficult website
confusing.
To navigate.
There's been lots of changes, especially in the last two or so years.
I can imagine.
And keeping up with all of that.
Yeah.
And do you think the changes have been beneficial mostly? The ones that I'm sure you know, all of them. I don't know. I mean, do you think they benefit the system, make it more?
Well, so that calls for a personal opinion also, and I'll give you one. But,
well, is it harder
I think it's
on the staff?
So I like the idea of making it easier to vote, okay? Not that it's difficult to vote to begin with, but every step we take that gets further away from in-person voting, whether it's on election day or 45 days before, it's still in-person voting. But every step we take away from that, in my view, doesn't cause problems, but it leaves a door open for problems. There's potential risks there.
Mm-hmm.
So
and that's a major concern for a lot of people.
That's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah, we recognize that.
Mm-hmm. Early voting, I think our experience here.
You did a good job. Thank you.
Very positive with it. I loved it, and the process worked great, and it was still in-person voting, and they all had confidence in that process.
My concern about the early voting is somehow with a terrible process that they go through, campaigning and whatnot, and the different information that comes out at the last minute, it's like, can you
too late. It's too late.
Do you change your, can you change your
It's raining and your windows are down a little bit.
Okay.
So are mine.
We probably should. Is there any way that a person could change?